Welcome to the Breezy Breakfast. Today we're getting an update on the Downtown Infrastructure Renewal Project. In January 2023, Reg Russworm and Stacey Laughlin gave us the lay of the downtown land. Some of the pipes are over 100 years old. We must prepare for the next 100 years by replacing water and wastewater pipes, storm sewers, roads, sidewalks, and so much more. This is a massive project that'll take several years to complete. The first reconstruction is on Wyndham Street from Carden Street to Woolwich Street. There'll be one lane of traffic in each direction, separated unidirectional bike paths, and parallel parking. St. George's Square will look much the same as it does now with the addition of the bike paths. Topics of interest include the pacing of the project, planting of trees, and of course, parking. Our guests were Reg Russworm, Manager of Design and Construction, Andrew Miller, Project Engineer, and Stacey Laughlin, the Downtown Revitalization Advisor. Now over to our moderator, Phil Ault.
Good morning and welcome to the approximately 160th radio and podcast of the Breezy Brothers Breakfast, where the coffee is strong and where the food for thought always gives you something to digest. To all, I wish you a very happy St. Patrick's Day. Please be reasonable if you are out there on the streets of Guelph. I want to thank everybody here for attending. I also wish to thank Rise and Shine for making us welcome. Thanks to all of our Diner Divas for taking over from Bev. Ashley, thank you for everything that you do for us. Somehow you managed to keep our coffee and our teacups full and warm. As we come to the anniversary of our 8th year of community conversations at Breezy Brothers Breakfast, I remind us all that we are here to engage in thoughtful dialogue about issues that affect our neighborhoods, our community, our city, and even sometimes our issues that are faced throughout the globe. But before I do that, I wish to provide a territorial acknowledgement. As we gather, let us take time to reflect on our privilege to live and work in Guelph, a city built over rich Indigenous histories. We are guests here. We should reflect upon the responsibility to care for this land, the people who live here today, and the generations to come. If our actions today can move us toward reconciliation, we should take pause and make those decisions with intention and gratitude. I'm happy to say that many kind supporters have come forward to offer financial support for this community news event. We are financially far healthier today than when we first made our irregular request for funds. That doesn't mean we still don't need to have financial support. So if you have any extra change at any point, we would truly appreciate it. We operate on the kindness of strangers. We are a nonprofit, unincorporated, and purely volunteer. All donations are used to provide honorary to guests and improvements to our equipment. Tanya, Morgan, you at home and here at the diner all contribute time and thought to what makes Guelph better, and this cannot occur if we do not have the funding. Please, if you think the Breezy keeps you informed, please consider a donation. Today we have with us our guests from the City of Guelph. We have Reg Russworm, Manager of Design and Construction, Andrew Miller, Project Engineer, and Stacey Laughlin, Downtown Revitalization Advisor. In January 2023, Reg Russworm and Stacey Laughlin gave us the lay of the downtown lands. Quoting from Tanya, "Our downtown infrastructure is ancient. We must prepare for the next 100 years by replacing infrastructure, water, wastewater pipes, storm sewers, roads, sidewalks, and so much more. At the 27th of February 2024 City Council meeting, Council directed staff to reconstruct Wyndham Street North as follows. From Carden Street to Woolwich Street, one lane of traffic in each direction, separated unidirectionally bike paths and parallel parking. St. George's Square as an offset intersection similar to existing conditions with operational improvements and separated bike lanes. But I can't tell you all this. We have guests who can tell it way better. And we're here to hear from them. And I have also heard loudly and clearly, we have not had enough time for questions lately from people who are attending. So today, I will turn it over to you as much as possible, and I will turn myself off. So let's stop hearing from me to listen to Reg, Andrew, Stacey, and then you. And with that, I would like to welcome you all and ask if you could please provide us with a brief introduction of yourselves and what it is you're talking about, and then we'll just cut right to the mustard.
Sounds great. Thank you, Phil. And thank you to the Breezy Breakfast crew for inviting us here today to talk about downtown. particularly infrastructure renewal, and the upcoming exciting reconstruction of our downtown. So this program of work is really a series of projects, and this is really a once in a generation or maybe multi-generation opportunity to reconstruct and redesign our downtown. And it's part of sort of an overall program called the Downtown Renewal Work. So the planning and research for this project started really in earnest in 2020, but goes back much further as past background studies and planning sort of laid the foundation for our work, going way back to the Downtown Secondary Plan in 2012. This program of work isn't a significant undertaking by the city. It's going to transform how downtown looks, feels, and functions. But we think it's really important to preserve our unique cultural heritage. So the infrastructure renewal program focuses on the public realm, and infrastructure is one piece of that bigger pie. So as Phil mentioned in the introduction, we do have aging infrastructure, and it needs to be replaced. It is at risk of failure, and nobody wants that for our downtown community. Furthermore, it also limits our opportunities to grow downtown and increase the residential density. So as we are doing this work, we're going to be upgrading the downtown roads, the sidewalks, the cycling facilities, and we also want to enhance the pedestrian zone or pedestrian realm and streetscaping to provide amazing placemaking opportunities. So we're really setting the foundation for that, for the downtown, for at least the next 50 years. So that's a little bit of background. So I'm sure you're interested in what's sort of happening next. And phase one of the program right now is slated to begin in spring of 2026. With that, I'm going to pass it over to Andrew to give you a bit more information.
Good morning, everyone. So, of course, we're all looking forward to spring of 2026 to get started on the Wyndham Street reconstruction project. But we do have some work coming up before then that we'd like everyone to be aware of. Starting this spring, Enbridge is going to be working on upgrading their gas facilities through the downtown, starting with McDonnell Street. So you're going to be seeing a lot of work around the sidewalk areas as they start to upgrade that infrastructure in advance of our work. We also have a little project coming for the Wyndham Wellington intersection where we'll be relieving a sanitary sewer capacity constraint that's preventing development in the south end of the downtown. We want to open up as much land for housing as possible, and this quick little fix is going to get us going a lot faster than if we waited until we were fully reconstructing the roadways there. But back to Wyndham Street North. In February, Council approved the Wyndham EA cross-section and St. George's Square reconfiguration. Phil's already gone through what the cross-section is going to look like, but we'll also have St. George's Square reconstructed entirely. It'll still function similarly to the way it functions now, but with upgrades to make it look a little bit nicer and function a little bit more efficiently. The next step for us is to go to council to have a discussion about streetscaping in the downtown. At this point in time, streetscaping hasn't been determined yet. We're still looking to see what we want to do and how we're going to do it. We're looking at sort of, if we were remodeling our house, at this point, we're going to be deciding on what type of flooring we're putting down, whether we put laminate, whether we put hardwood. We're not going to get into the details of the furniture yet. We're just looking at what the base is going to look like. So with that, I'll pass it to Reg.
Well, thank you, Andrew. As we get into construction, we're under no delusions that the reconstruction of Wyndham Street North will not be extremely disruptive to our businesses, visitors, residents of our downtown. That first phase of our downtown reconstruction is not going to be a typical reconstruction project. So we're not going to handle it like we would typically a reconstruction project. There will be an enhanced community engagement. Also, we're approaching construction mitigation with new ideas around how we can make it as painless as we can. Like, again, there will be disruption. We just can't get around that. A big piece of that conversation is going to be around the pace of construction. The extremes are, you know, do we take it slowly, a little bit at a time, or do we go fast and do it all at once? I like to say it's like ripping a bandage off. Are you going to do it all at once, or are you going to take it slowly? So there's pros and cons to each of them, and we're going to be exploring those over the next couple of months. And with our engagement that's coming up, it's important to note that under either pacing scenario, there will always be access to our businesses for pedestrians, save and except maybe something's happening right in front of the front door. But at all times, we're going to be having pedestrians access. We will deal with logistics around deliveries and such forth as we work through that process. We're looking at other options and supports that we can provide to reduce those impacts. To that end, your audience and yourselves are invited to attend a public open house that's happening on Wednesday, March the 27th at 6:30 at City Hall to learn more about the Wyndham Street North project and about all the future downtown infrastructure renewal projects. Ultimately, right now, we're looking at 9 different phases. We're just talking about the first phase right now on Wyndham. So I invite everybody to come out, learn more, engage with the project team, ask questions. We want to hear from businesses and residents, especially those in the downtown, about the pacing and phasing of the future work and the overall program. We want to hear about what's important to you so that we can learn from those and we can proactively come up with a plan to mitigate those disruptions. We're going to be going door to door from Street North businesses who are going to be impacted, and we're going to be talking with you directly. We'll soon be rolling, interesting, fun enough, we'll be rolling out a Diggable Downtown Guelph engagement campaign, which has got a lot of fun ideas associated with it, and we're looking forward to seeing what that's going to look like. This engagement campaign will show what's great about downtown Guelph now and how we're transforming it to become even more remarkable in the future. We want to highlight the downtown as somewhere you can live, work, play, and love. Now, while also showcasing that our future downtown will look more, it'll be more walkable, more shoppable, bikeable, sustainable, lovable, and more. We're going to riff on that ABLE in the Diggable Downtown. Significant projects like this don't happen overnight. It takes years to study, engage, and plan and implement. We're still in the early stages of this overall program, which is going to last in the number of years. So we definitely want to engage with our folks downtown Guelph, make sure that it is right for you. The downtown will and continue to be the heart of our city. It's important that we hear from the Guelph residents how you want to see this work unfold. We need the community's input to get it right. Ultimately, all this renewal work that's going on within the public realm that Andrew and I are leading, and all the work that Stacy's doing on other initiatives is going to create that vibrant downtown for the entire city. So thanks, Phil, for some opening comments from us, and then happy to...
And thank you very much. I am very quickly going to pass the microphone over to the public because I know that there are people here that have questions. But before we do, Russ, I just want to follow up on your last comments there. I appreciate you stating that downtown is the heart of the city. Now, the heart of the city strikes me as having changed remarkably over the last decade. COVID, shopping malls, parking challenges, Amazon and shopping being delivered right to your door have had a significant impact. Do we have any idea what the commercial character of downtown might be like in 10 years, or is that too much crystal ball gazing?
Thanks for the question, Phil. I think that's a little bit of crystal ball gazing. First, I'd like to say we don't have parking challenges downtown. We have tons of parking. What we do have is a perception problem, and we are working to fix that. We almost always have 300 spaces available in any of our structures at any one time. So that is a perception that we are working to change. And as far as like sort of the commercial, where commercial is going downtown, we are working closely with both the DGBA as well as economic development and our community business support partners to make sure that we understand trends that are occurring and will occur. So
great. And thank you. I'm glad I asked you the question about parking, because I think it's a very important one to understand that perception sometimes is reality, but this reality is more of an illusion. Tanya, I'm just going to pass the microphone to you because we have a number of questions out there in breakfast land.
Well, the first question I'm going to ask is from Morgan. Does walkable mean a separation between sidewalks and parking areas?
So the short answer to that is yes. If you look at the cross section, which you'll see if you come out to our PIC, there is a pedestrian zone that's going to be roughly about 6 meters from the front of the buildings. That will be that pedestrian realm. And it will consist of dedicated sidewalk space, but then also areas that for patio programs, also some green space where there'll be some plantings placed. There'll be a good wide area on each side of the corridor for pedestrian realm. We are extremely lucky that John Galt, 200 years ago, gave us 30 meters, or back in his day, 100 feet of road allowance that we got to work with. So we're blessed in that point that we've got the real estate to do interesting things with that corridor.
Thank you, Russ. I'm going to now give the mic to Warren.
Thanks very much. Nice presentation. I have a question, because we've heard some sessions before and people talk about what they perceive a Guelph to be. How do you profile it? Is it going to be a village, a town, or a city? And the reason I bring that up is that if you look at some great, great cities, and I'm sure you've studied some, Singapore or Shanghai, like that, big cities, they all do it with high rises. And we've heard that there is, and there has been, a reluctance to establish high rises around, which is a good base for population. So, a village, a town, a city.
Thank you for the question. I think generally at the city, in planning, economic development, engineering, we characterize Guelph as a city, more specifically a mid-sized city. But when we're talking about building height, we don't see the typical, you know, 50 stories that we're starting to see over at our neighbors in Kitchener-Waterloo, or, you know, further west in Mississauga, or higher than that. We are initiating a review of the downtown heights to see where additional building height can be accommodated downtown, or should be accommodated downtown. So we are looking at potentially increasing the height permissions where it's appropriate.
Double-pronged question, if I may. First of all, I'd certainly advocate for fast and dirty, because habit forming is part of our trade. I think about the intersection at Woolwich and Speedvale, which is not your purview, but it drove people crazy. They found different places, and that mall was open for business, but it's still doing poorly because of that. So fast and dirty. The second thing is, this will be done during the summer, right? Which is also known as patio season, which is fairly polite and structured during the daytime. But as the hours wear on into the evening, it is less so. And if there's construction going on, there will need to be, I assume, some safeguards against those people who no longer care about where they're walking, shall we say, at night. So has that come into consideration?
Thank you very much for that question, raising the concerns about public safety. Yes, we have thought about that as well. We have to, under your down and dirty scenario, fast-paced construction, we'll essentially have property line to property line, building face to building face under construction. And it'll be, but there will be a pedestrian area on the outside. You can imagine a 6-foot high fence all the way around the site to provide that security with construction gates that the contractors can get in and out of.
There's been an announcement about budget that the budget increase will be limited to 4% next year. What will the impact be on downtown redevelopment?
So, Phil, that is an excellent question. And if I'm being entirely truthful, as you know, that just came out not long ago. So we are figuring it out. So I don't know the answer to that right now, but we will be working to understand those impacts on this project and a lot of other projects that are happening in the city.
So just like a good TV show, what we're saying is stand by for updates.
That's correct.
Very well. And now, Erin, if you wouldn't mind, I would love to hear your question from you directly.
So my question kind of is a spinoff of Morgan's question. So I know that because of the strong mayor announcement, we were told that any infrastructure piece that has not been already put into place is kind of tenuous. And when we were approving the budget for the downtown infrastructure renewal, we cut it a little bit. So we went from what staff were saying was great in terms of the streetscaping to good. And I was wondering, in your analogy of hardwood to laminate, does this put us onto the, like, tiles sticking on the floor stage in terms of the streetscaping if the budget goes much lower?
Great question. I was going to ask the same. What, asbestos tiles or hardwood?
I don't know if you get asbestos tiles anymore. If they're cheap on eBay,
sure.
That whole question around streetscaping for downtown, we're going to start that conversation with council at our April 17th workshop with them. And we're asking council to consider the investment in the level of service of streetscaping for downtown. And once we're through that workshop, we'll be coming back in June to a formal session of council to at least get direction from them and how to include it within the budget for coming up. So we are going through that in light of the mayor's announcements. We are going through that budget reset process right now.
It's Mike Darman from GCAT, and we're really pleased, obviously, to see this project moving ahead. But one key component, and it's a great connector to the downtown renewal, is the Ward's downtown bridge, and it's been put on pause, too. Can you give us any update on that?
Thanks, Mayor, for that question. This may or may not know, we had to pause that project. We ran into construction issues that were going to drive the costs up. And sort of a good project management approach at the time is to say, okay, hang on, let's limit the bleed here. Let's understand the issues, and then we're going to make decisions to move forward. So we're in that stage of understanding all the constraints we're working with, and we're going to be reviewing options over the next few months and then engaging in council probably with a discussion, probably through this budget reset process.
I'm just curious. There's a major building project going on in the downtown core now, and it sort of will come to fruition, it sounds like, when you're going to start. So as far as people in the downtown are concerned, it's a real big disruption. And why is the timing being set up in that way? Why isn't it being coordinated with the library project and stuff that's going on now?
Well, I would say it is being coordinated. I know there's going to be overlap and it's going to get messy, but we are coordinating our work amongst all the projects and initiatives that are going on downtown Guelph. Again, it comes back to that issue is our infrastructure in downtown is failing. You can see it in the roads. But if you had an opportunity to look at the sewer videos or the water main history, the breaks, we are driving a car that's just about going to be recalled by the mechanic. So we have to start that work. And 2026 is as good a year as any to get it moving.
Before we go to another question, your comment about infrastructure, I think, is very important. The image is fascinating. And not one that I really want to know about, actually, but I have heard that we are so constrained right now in the downtown core that there is very little capacity for any infill. And that even would include single family or semi-detached dwellings. I was wondering if you could just expand on that, because that's huge.
Yeah, thanks, Phil, for that question. There are certainly areas where there are pinch points in our infrastructure and our capacity that we really don't have the opportunity to approve additional residential units or additional development. So we really need to figure out, we know where those pinch points are. We need to fix them so that we can increase opportunities for more housing.
And Joe has a question.
I have a quick question about building heights. When we moved into Guelph, we were told that the height of any building in downtown Guelph could not interfere with the lines of viewing from Church of Our Lady. Is the height of buildings still in Guelph, or is that actually a law or something that's required, or is it just something that people say?
Thank you for that question. So it has been a guiding principle that has sort of set the maximum building height in downtown and throughout the city. So if you see the 18-story building heights that are currently permitted, so the existing two tri-car buildings at Woolwich and Macdonnell, and then we have two other 18-story sites down at Wyndham and Wellington, the top of those buildings is sort of aligned with the top of the Basilica. But there are protected view corridors as well. So it's not a law, but it has been a guiding principle to date. And that is something that we are taking a look at. Phil did mention there was an OLT decision regarding 75 Dublin, which is right beside the Basilica. It doesn't go higher than it. There's also been an OLT decision with respect to a property at 70 Fountain Street, which does permit additional height and would likely go above the height of the Basilica. So again, it's been a guiding principle that has set our maximum heights, but I wouldn't say it's a law per se.
if you could just carry on with that a bit, you mentioned that there are view corridors, and I think that's misunderstood by people. I think people believe that there's an absolute cap everywhere on height. What do we mean by view corridors?
So what we mean by view corridors are there are certain points that have been chosen and were chosen many, many years ago. And from that point, there should always be a protected view of the basilica. Many of these run along our streets. So like if you're thinking looking up north along Gordon, sort of from down at Wellington, sort of from the top of the Aramosa Hill. So there are public points where there's a protected view to the basilica. And so there's not building height is not allowed in that area, but there is no overall cap throughout the entire city that says the height can only be this, whatever the geodetic elevation of the top of the basilica.
We have a question here from Gordon on Zoom.
Then yeah. To what extent is climate change impact being considered in infrastructure renewal, and who is putting that forward? Who is determining what that likely impact is and what the need will be?
Thanks for that question regarding climate change. It is a very important topic. That theme runs through all our reconstruction work and all our infrastructure renewal work. Primarily, we're looking at the issues around rainfall. So when we are looking at our sizing of our sewers and that, we are projecting what the increase in our future rainfall will be and how it will affect our infrastructure. We're putting those allowances in the ground now, knowing these pipes are going to be in the ground 80, 90 years. So we're projecting ahead a little bit and saying, what's it going to look like, and designing that into our system. And it also has to go get the pipe underground, but we also got to get the water off the roads. As we get into our detailed design, we're looking out, you know, how fast we got to get the water off the road into the sewers. You can have the sewers all the size you want, but if you don't have the inlet capacity, you're not doing much. So it is a key component of climate change, risk mitigation around rainfall events is key to our design of our infrastructure.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for coming this morning. It's wonderful that our city staff is so accessible and can answer some of these kinds of questions. And last question was a great lead-in for me, because I'm also very interested in climate change and how we have to think about that in every facet possible. And I'm curious about the life cycle of those Enbridge gas lines that will be, along with the other structural things, put in place.
So the Enbridge gas system that we have in downtown is extremely old and doesn't meet current safety requirements. It's low pressure and they need to upgrade it to modern standards. So what they're putting in now is going to be the top of modern standard plastic gas main that has an estimated 75-year life cycle to it. So that'll be upgraded for the foreseeable lifetime of the downtown renewal. In terms of the other infrastructure we're putting in, we're currently in talks with our third-party utility partners like Electra, as we try to forecast sort of what our demand is going to be throughout the downtown. We've got big changes coming with technology. There's electric vehicles, there's heat pumps, there's all sorts of new technologies coming out that will demand different energy needs than had previously been required. So for the moment, the Enbridge gas mains need to be there because we need to supply everyone who has an existing gas furnace, gas water heater, all of those appliances. But we're also trying to plan for a future where we have more electricity demand and make sure that we're not short-sighting the changes that we're making so that we would have to come back and redo it again a few years later. We don't want to do that. We want to do this once and be out of here and make sure that the future is ready for us.
Yeah, and thank you. And I'm just curious, you're probably aware of the OEB, Ontario Energy Board, decision about not having gas lines go into new developments because they felt that a 40-year amortization period was a dinosaur, right? We would be paying for that infrastructure, which will only be useful for perhaps another 20 years. So isn't it the same kind of thing? I mean, of course, people have gas in their homes already and Enbridge will want to do that. But aren't we asking people to stay stuck in fossil fuels?
Yeah. So the answer to that one really would just be that, unfortunately, it is the current situation. So we do need to make sure that we're providing for what is in place now. We don't have the ability to provide incentives to move everyone over to fully electric appliances at this point. It would be a huge undertaking. And it's not really within the purview of the city to push people away from a specific utility or energy source. So while I agree with the point that in the future, there may not be the need for gas, for right now, we do need it. So we just have to make sure that we meet the standards so that we make sure everyone's safe and make sure everyone can have a reliable supply in the short term.
Robert, one of the things you talked about is the start, but you've not really defined the duration. You've sort of hedged it, oh, we're thinking about it, we've got lots of work to do. You mentioned that we can go quick, we can go slow. I mean, have you got service corridors where when you dig a trench, you can do multi-services at one time, and so that you don't have to go back, and any disruption, if you have to upgrade or go back, it's located in a way that it's going to be less disruptive in the future. In terms of sewer and storm drains, I take your argument, but I ask the question, have the city got sufficient information and mapping what is buried in the ground already and disused, old cables, things like that? I've done a lot of mapping of downtown city roads, and what you can do is devise a corridor for where those new services are put so that you don't increase the value or the delays in the project. You know, the two biggest delays are contamination, where you encounter it, so that adds a curveball and a delay to remove that contamination. And the other one is our architectural heritage findings and, dare I say, bodies and graves and all sorts. These things cause major delays. And this is an old city, you know, and I think the issue I'm trying to come to is, how complete is the service? And you mentioned sizing of some of the utilities based on the future demands of the downtown. I'm a proud resident, new resident of downtown, and I love this city. And I do want the disruption to be less. I want it to be a beautiful city we're all proud of. If you've got allowing 20 stories, say, for instance, in the downtown area, and you don't know how many 20-story buildings there's going to be, How do you size the sewers to accommodate those? You know, you've got to come up with a demand and a number of buildings to determine what that supply is. And that, you know, so I'm looking at the duration and the potential risks, and also allowing the limited disruption by having well-thought-out service corridors. I appreciate that. Thank you.
There's a number of questions in there. And if I don't hit them all, please somebody remind me what I missed. First on duration, and I know we talked about fast and slow. In concept, again, subject, we're just getting into the final design right now. But in concept, I envision a fast 2 years. 2 years of reconstruction of Wyndham North. Slow, 4 or 5. You know, you can stretch it out as long as you want, really. But the minimum I could see it usually being done is 2 years plus maybe a little cleanup in the third. The question around future infrastructure sizing, we've had that discussion as well. And, you know, we're pushing our friends in planning to give us the numbers so we can fill in the spreadsheet. But realistically, the catchment we're working with the sewers and the area we're working with and the impact and the life of the infrastructure, I'll tend to size high. Because even though our planning folks do the best thinking they can, they're giving us 30, 40, 50-year numbers. I got infrastructure that's going to last 80. So if you oversize it by one pipe size, really it means nothing in the cost, because most of the cost of putting in a sewer is digging the hole and filling it back in again. So if you go up a size, it's not going to be the end of the world. You like to be responsible, but as engineers, we also are a little conservative. And your points around archaeological and soil contamination. Yeah, we've done a lot of those investigations already. We've done our geotechnical background work to understand what our risks are, where the rock is, that sort of thing. We have archaeological investigations have been done. Doesn't seem to be a very big risk yet, but I'm with you. There could be surprises out there, and that's in our risk mitigation strategy, is is to be able to deal with that quickly if we something comes up. You talked about service corridors. Yeah, so we, again, as we get into this, the final design stage, we, like Andrew and I, we've got a concept where we're talking with our utilities, our third-party utilities, Electra, natural gas. We're saying, here's a corridor for your pre-planning, and then we know roughly where our other infrastructure is going to go. But essentially, it's going to be dug up from building face to building face. Any old pipes coming out, and we're putting our new stuff in.
Well, the beauty of having many people at Breezy Breakfast is many of the questions that I have off the top of my head are asked by others. I was very concerned about service corridors or vaulting, and also contamination, what we might expect to find. So thanks to both of you for answering those. And I have a note from Tanya that she has a quick question. So I think that we will probably try to accommodate her right now.
Thank you, Phil. And thank you, everyone in the restaurant, for being so patient. So my question is really like bread and butter. On Wyndham Street North, my understanding is that the parking will be parallel instead of angled. Do you have any idea? Well, first of all, is this because to make room for patios and also or to make sidewalks bigger and to make the bike lanes? I guess I would like to know, I know that's three questions, but I'd like to know the rationale behind that, because as a driver, the angled parking obviously is much more voluminous.
And now we'll hear from you about voluminous parking.
So the way we've gone about designing the corridor is that we want to try to give equal priority to everyone while also following the intentions listed out in our official plan. So Wyndham Street is intended to be a pedestrian priority network. We wanted to give them wide sidewalks. The official plan calls for 6 meters on each side of the road, and we're hitting 6 meters on each side of the road. The official plan also calls for the cycle track so that we'll have AAA protected cycling infrastructure through downtown, which we are also accommodating. Now, there's no specific direction given to aim for the maximum quantity of parking, and as we still had to make the road space wide enough to accommodate, well, transit passing through, emergency services passing through, parking was where we had to revert back to the parallel parking that was originally on Wyndham Street North ahead of COVID. But the angled parking on Wyndham North was a pilot project during the pandemic to allow a little bit more space for people to come downtown. But now that we're moving along from COVID and getting into recovery, we'll return that to parallel parking. So there won't be any change in parking numbers from what there was back in 2019 on Wyndham Street, but we will be removing that a little bit just in that section at the north end.
Thank you very much for your response. And now I'd like to turn it to Morgan, who has a question.
One of the things that we know is that trees mitigate heat, especially in downtown areas where you've got a lot of asphalt and concrete. We can see by the condition and loss of many of our trees downtown that past planting practices have not been optimal. And I am wondering if berms are going to be used or if the infrastructure corridors are going to be buried deeper to allow for root structure to actually help, and we can end up having a beautiful tree canopy through the downtown area.
That's a terrific question around trees and how do you go about installing trees so that they'll actually live longer than a couple of years. There are techniques available. Something called civil cells creates a honeycomb effect underneath the ground where you can then you fill it with topsoil and creates that root ball where the trees can grow. Cause oftentimes that's what limits the size of a tree, is where it can get its roots and nurture from. So those are surprisingly expensive. So when you're talking $40,000-$50,000 per installed tree, that it gets a little high. So we will be looking at where trees are the right investment, for downtown. And often that that will be part of our workshop with council around streetscaping, because trees are the backbone of that streetscaping discussion.
I'm going to very quickly go back to transportation and bike lanes. I was wondering, Andrew, or perhaps one of the others of you, whether you could please explain for people what we mean by AAA bike lanes. Also, it's three parts here. How we are going to accommodate buses, because we had a couple of active transit critics being very concerned about that. And if I'm correct, we will have single lane traffic both ways in downtown. We could just highlight those issues and how that's really going to transform downtown.
All right. So AAA cycling facilities mean all ages and abilities. So anyone can ride on these facilities completely comfortably, whether they're 8 years old, whether they're 80 years old. We want to make sure that the cyclists we see passing through or using our whole transportation network isn't just the typical some guy in his late 20s. We want it to be toddlers. Yeah, so we want to see everyone out there using their bikes. And this isn't just for bicycles. This could be scooters. This could be micro-mobility devices. There's a whole range of things that can use these lanes. And it just gives people more options for being able to get around safely and comfortably. So we want to put that through downtown, make sure that everyone has a chance to cycle or scooter or roll or however they want to get there, and separate them from pedestrians. On the transit point, we have had plenty of coordination with Guelph Transit. We're designing the lanes to be wide enough to accommodate their buses comfortably and make sure that they can pass through unimpeded. So we're not seeing concerns there, especially when we had a bit of a conversation about the difference between the parallel parking spots along the lanes versus the angled parking spots. And Guelph Transit is in favor of the parallel, as there's a lot more safety with them. It's easier to see if a bus is coming when you're trying to pull out of a parallel spot. When people back out of the angled one, sometimes they don't see the bus coming and then they pull out right in front of a bus, which is a much bigger risk to them and slows them down a lot more. Single lane traffic. Yeah. So one of the main points about this is that this is our downtown. This isn't a place where we want to be pushing through as many personal vehicles as possible. This is a place where we want to be comfortable walking, sitting, dining, playing, whatever else you want to do downtown. There's a lot more activity going on than just pushing as many vehicles through as possible. And we want to make sure that we're encouraging experiencing it in all those other ways and not just driving through it. So the single lane of traffic will reduce the potential throughput of the roadway, but the intention is also that it will encourage people to only use the roadway if they're coming to downtown. If they want to go through downtown, they can go around. We have nice large roads, Norfolk and Woolwich, are both great routes to get around downtown without having to cut through the middle. And then it makes it a more comfortable experience for those who want to ride their bike or sit on a patio. And I know we've heard a lot of comments in the past about how it can be very uncomfortable sitting on the patio with live traffic right beside you. So we've taken that into account and we're hoping to greatly improve the user experience.
John.
No reflection on you guys. I perceive this meeting as being a little early in the process. You don't have answers to a lot of questions at this point. When the public participation comes online, would it be better to reconvene this meeting at that time so that you have more answers for us and that we can truly make objective decisions?
I'll be the first one to say we don't have all the answers at this point. How we approach these infrastructure projects is we take it a step, one key decision, then move on to the next one. So we don't have multiple paths we can be wandering down. And I would hope we can be invited back to the Breezy Breakfast numerous more times as we approach 2026. And as we reach every milestone, that we can then come back and give you a little bit more information and talk to you about what we have learned. Again, I'm encouraging everyone, come out to our March the 27th PIC boards. You'll learn a lot more and have an opportunity with talk with the project team there. And again, it's all incremental information. We want to get input on how fast we want construction, what type of construction mitigation techniques does the community want? Because then we start working that into our design. And then we'll have that piece of information nailed down as we advance to the next stage.
Mike?
Thanks. I just wanted to add another little comment. Andrew answered most of my actual question, but it's more of a comment now. It's on the angle parking again. And I think the great thing about getting rid of the angle parking is obviously the safety issue for us, but also the amount of space it takes up. Like, you can't have the complete street design, I don't think, with angle parking. It takes up almost two full lanes of traffic. That's that amount of space. So it's a small compromise, I think. So anyway, that was the main comment.
Thank you, Mike. And now our last question is going to be from Juanita.
Thanks. This is just a quick comment to follow up on what John said. And I think the idea of coming to us early is a good one, because you don't necessarily know everything you have to think about when you're planning something like this. So I think it was very useful. I think it would be good to follow up, like John said, but I don't see this as a problem that we're before everything is sorted out. I think that's great.
Thank you, Juanita. I would concur. And now I pass the mic to Phil.
And at this point, I would like to thank all of our guests, Stacy, Russ, and Andrew, for attending and for offering to return at a later date. This is truly appreciated. As many people are aware, Breezy Breakfast does disseminate information, not just within the restaurant, but via podcast and via radio shows. And when we are talking about downtown redevelopment, many people are impatient for it. And many people think that nothing's getting done. We're hearing that it's getting done. There are some challenges. Certainly there will be financial challenges that had not been anticipated a year ago. We will certainly find some challenges when we start digging up Wyndham Street. But we know that you're up to those. And we really appreciate you being here. And at this point, I am passing it over to Tanya.
Thank you, Phil. First, I'm going to start with Have Your Say, and it's an Ontario edition. It's regarding Bill 162, which is, I'm not kidding, called the Get It Done Act, amending the Official Plan Adjustments Act 2023. So Bill 162 proposes several changes to Bill 150. Proposed changes follow consultations with the affected municipalities and, where appropriate, respond to feedback from these local municipalities, which are the cities of Barrie, Belleville, Guelph, Hamilton, Ottawa, Peterborough, Wellington County, and the regions of Halton, Peel, Waterloo, and York. Also, it provides for several urban boundary expansions, including York Region and Halton Region. The Official Plan Amendments Act 2023 changes will be deemed to come into force retroactively as of December 6th, 23rd. And I've given you all of this information because I'm sure you'll want to comment on this by March 21st. Please Google ERO, Get It Done Act. Now, what's happening with GO? Cambridge, Kitchener, Guelph, and Toronto. The region of Waterloo, instead of a have your say, has the engage. You engage the region. And the region of Waterloo has made a business case for the connectivity between Cambridge, Kitchener, Guelph, and Toronto. At Guelph City Hall on March 21st, from 6 to 8 p.m., they will be giving a presentation and a Q&A. There is a virtual meeting on March 19th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. To register and get this link, please Google Engage Region of Waterloo. There is a community climate survey online right now. Please go to the following website: tiny url.com/communityclimate2024. The deadline is March 31st. Now, have your say in Guelph. The Drew Park Revitalization Project, there is a survey open until March 31st. Also open until March 31st is a survey and comments about the Downtown Heritage Conservation District. There is a council planning meeting March 20th at 10 a.m. On the agenda is the development fee review and the bylaw review of demolition control. Next week on Breezy Breakfast, we're talking about climate and environmental activism. Our guest will be Karen Rathwell from the Guelph Climate Action Network and someone from the Guelph Environmental Justice. Coming soon on Breezy Breakfast, we're talking about tiny homes in Guelph, the mental health of kids and teens, and on April the 11th, we're going to have an old school analog session with Phil and I as your hosts. I'd like to thank our guests. I'd like to thank everybody who came here and stuck around through all the technical difficulties. See you next week.
That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Music provided by Jules Germ. The podcast is produced by the CFRU Media Center. Breezy Breakfast. Join the constructive conversation.